Chapter 36. The empty patch of sand that yielded Summer's porcelain figurine now looked like an underwater construction site. Aluminum grids and yellow ropes stretched in all directions across the seabed, punctuated by tiny orange flags staked into the ground. What had started as a sample test pit dug near the rocky outcropping had grown into a full-blown excavation project after Dirk and Summer uncovered a large framing timber buried 2 feet under the sand. Additional test pits confirmed that the porcelain figure and stone anchor were no random objects tossed over the side, but part of an entire wreck buried between the two coral reefs. Beautifully crafted blue and white porcelain plates and bowls, along with votives and carvings of jade, all hinted at a wreck of Chinese origin. Portions of the ship's frame also correlated with the design of a massively sized Chinese junk. To Summer's amazement and chagrin, the potential discovery of an early Chinese ship in Hawaiian waters had caused a sensation. Media representatives from around the world descended on her like vultures to capture the story. After a slate of repetitive news interviews, she was only too happy to slip on a tank and fins and escape the bedlam underwater. The news hounds would lose interest in the story quick enough, she knew, and then the excavation could be resumed uninterrupted. Summer floated over the grids and passed a pair of divers, blowing sand away from a large timber believed to be the sternpost. A few yards away, manual probes driven into the sand had detected another large section of wood that might be the rudder. Gliding to the edge of the worksite, she kicked toward the surface alongside a drop line, holding a balled fist over her head until she broke the surface. A brown metal barge was now moored over the site, and Summer swam the few yards over to its side ladder. Tossing her fins onto the deck, she climbed up and onto the small barge. It was little more than an open deck, with a dingy tin hut constructed at one end. A wall rack full of dive gear hung against the side of the hut, while the deck rail was lined with a generator, water pump, and several compressors. A pair of surfboards lying on the tin shack's roof offered the only hint of frivolity to the worksite. The boards belonged to Dirk and Summer and were deemed standard equipment whenever they worked in Hawaii. "How's the water?" drawled the voice of Jack Dahlgren. He was hunched over one of the compressors, screwdriver in hand, as Summer stowed her tank and dive gear. "It's Hawaii," she smiled. "Always a delight." She toweled her hair off, then walked over to Dahlgren. "Be up and running soon?" she asked. "Just waiting for a final fuel and supply drop from the Mariana. We've got one compressor to run an airlift and another to provide surface-supplied air. They'll make diving in these purdy waters a breeze." "I'm more excited about applying the airlift to the last few buried areas." The airlift was little more than a hollow tube with compressed air fed into the lower end. The pressurized air ascended up the tube, producing a vacuum effect ideal for sucking away sand and loose debris from a wreck site. "Mariana Explorer to Brown Bess," crackled a handheld radio strung to the side rail. Dirk's voice was instantly recognized on the other end. "Bess here. Come on back," Dahlgren replied. "Jack, we've got the fuel and hot dogs and are 10 miles away. The captain says we'll tie up on your leeward side to offload the fuel." "We'll be waiting." Dahlgren peered across the horizon, spotting a turquoise dot cruising toward the barge. Then the radio crackled once more. "And tell Summer that she has yet another visitor who would like to talk to her about the wreck. Explorer out." "Not another reporter," Summer cursed, rolling her eyes in disgust. "Summer says she'll be happy as a clam to host another interview." "Bess out," Dahlgren replied into the microphone, laughing at Summer's taciturn look. The Numa vessel arrived within the hour and tied up alongside the barge. While Dahlgren oversaw the loading of a 55-gallon drum of gasoline, Summer climbed aboard the Mariana Explorer and made her way to the wardroom. There she found Dirk having coffee with a dark-skinned Asian man wearing slacks and a navy polo shirt. "Summer, come meet Dr. Alfred Tong," Dirk said, waving her over. Tong stood up and bowed, then shook Summer's outstretched hand.
"A pleasure to meet you, Miss Pitt," he said,
looking up into the gray eyes of the taller woman. He had a powerful grip, she noted, and skin like her own that had seen much of the sun. She tried hard not to stare at a prominent scar that ran down his left cheek, instead gazing at his intense walnut-colored eyes and jet-black hair.
"Thank goodness," Summer blushed. "I was expecting another TV reporter."
"Dr. Tong is a conservator with the National Museum of Malaysia," Dirk explained.
"Yes,"
Tong said, and nodded, then continued in choppy English.
"I was attending a seminar at the University of Hawaii when I heard of your discovery. An associate at the university put me in touch with a local NUMA representative. Your captain and brother were kind enough to invite me out for the day."
"The logistics were well-timed," Dirk explained. "The Mariana Explorer happened to be in Hilo picking up fuel and supplies for the barge and will be returning that direction this evening."
"What is your interest in the wreck?" Summer asked. "We have a sizable collection of Southeast Asian artifacts in the museum, as well as an extensive exhibit from a 14th century Chinese vessel excavated from the Straits of Malacca. Though it is not my specific area of expertise, I have some knowledge of Yuan and Ming Dynasty pottery. I am interested in what you have retrieved, and thought I might offer assistance in identifying the age of the vessel through its artifacts. I, like many others, would revel in the discovery of a 13th century Chinese royal vessel in the Western Pacific."
"Identifying the age of the vessel is a key question," Summer replied. "I'm afraid we've uncovered just a limited number of ceramic artifacts. We sent a sampling to the University of California for analysis, but I'd be happy to let you examine the remaining items."
"Perhaps the context of the artifact finds will be useful. Can you share with me the condition and configuration of the wreck?"
Dirk unrolled a large script of paper sitting on the table. "I was just going to walk you through the excavation profile before Summer walked in." They all took a seat at the table and examined the chart. It was a computer-aided diagram of the wreck site from an overhead view. Sections of timbers and scattered artifacts were displayed in a horseshoe-shaped region next to the lava bed. Tong was surprised by the tiny amount of remains and artifacts documented in the drawing, hardly indicative of a large sailing vessel. "We've worked with the archaeologists from the University of Hawaii to excavate nearly all of the accessible portions of the wreck. Unfortunately, we are only seeing about 10% of the entire vessel," Dirk said.
"The rest is under coral?" Tong asked.
"No, the wreck actually lies perpendicular to two reefs under a sandbar with her nose to the shore," Summer said. She pointed to the diagram, which showed two coral mounds on either side of the excavation field. "The sand has protected the existing artifacts from consumption by the coral. We think this section of sand may have been a natural channel cut through the reef eons ago when the seas were lower.
If the coral has not imprisoned the wreck, then why are there not more remains visible?"
"In a word, lava." Summer pointed to the closed end of the horseshoe, which showed a rocky bed that ran off the chart in the direction of the shoreline. "If you look out the window, you can see that this section of coastline is one big lava field. The rest of the wreck, I'm sorry to say, is buried under a bed of lava rock."
"Remarkable," Tong said with a cocked brow. So the rest of the wreck and its cargo is intact under the lava. The rest of the ship is either under the lava or was consumed by it. If the ship sank and was buried under sand before the lava flow arrived, then it may well be preserved intact beneath the lava field. The timbers we've found adjacent to the lava field are well buried, which suggests that the rest of the ship may indeed still be there. The upside is that we may be able to use the lava to help age the wreck, Dirk said. We have a local volcanologist studying the historical record of volcanic eruptions and associated lava flows on this part of the island. So far, we know that there has been no volcanic activity in this immediate area for at least 200 years, and possibly much longer. We hope to receive more definitive information in a few days. And what of the actual ship have you identified? Just a few pieces, which appear to be from the stern section. The timbers are thick, indicating a potentially large ship, perhaps even 200 feet or more. Then there is the anchor stone, which is consistent with known Chinese design, and also indicative of a sizable vessel. A vessel that size and age would most certainly be Chinese, Tong said. Yes, Dirk replied. The European vessels of the day were half as large. I've read of the legend of the Chinese Admiral Zhang He, who purportedly sailed around the world with his massive treasure fleet in 1405. This is no six-masted, 500-foot behemoth, though, like Zhang He supposedly sailed, if such massive ships even existed. History tends to exaggerate, Tong said. But crossing half the Pacific 100 years before Zhang He's purported voyage would be an astounding accomplishment. The ceramic artifacts recovered present the most intriguing evidence that the wreck is that old, Summer said. We've found comparable design patterns in our research which suggest the ship may date to the 13th or 14th centuries. Perhaps you can confirm our assessment with an examination of the ceramics? I am most interested to see what you have recovered. Summer led them down a flight of stairs to a brightly illuminated laboratory. Racks of plastic bins lined the back bulkhead, all filled with various artifacts recovered from the wreck and now soaking in fresh water. Most of the items recovered were fragments of the actual ship, she explained. The cargo holds and living quarters must all be under the lava, as we recovered few personal artifacts. We did find a few everyday cooking utensils and a large pot, she said, pointing to an end rack. But you will probably be most interested in these. She pulled two trays off one of the racks and set them on a stainless steel table. Inside the trays were several plates, a bowl, and numerous fragments of porcelain. Most of the items were sugary white in color, though the bowl was made of black clay. Tong's eyes lit up as he slipped on a pair of reading glasses and began examining the artifacts. Yes, very nice, he muttered as he quickly ran through the inventory. What can you tell us about the design? Summer asked. The patterns and material are consistent with the product of the Chinese kilns at Jingdezhan and Jianyang. The overall quality appears less advanced than the work produced during the later Ming Dynasty. The fish emblem here, he said, holding up one of the plates. I have seen this before on a Yuan period bowl. I would concur with your assessment. These ceramics are characteristic of items manufactured in the Song and Yuan dynasties of the 12th and 13th centuries. A broad smile crossed Summer's lips, and she gave a happy wink to Dirk. Tong reached over and pulled the last artifact from the tray, a large teal and white plate with a pie slice section missing from the platter. The glazed image of a peacock strutted across the center, while smaller images of a cheetah chasing a herd of deer circled the plate's perimeter. Tong studied the plate with a renewed intensity, looking again and again at the ornate glazing and animal portrayal.
One of the lab conservators found a similar design in the database used by Yuan Royalty, Dirk said.
Yes, it is, Tong muttered, then put the plate down and backtracked. Similar, that is, but surely not made for royalty.
A close design used for trade, most likely, he added.
But I would agree that it is from the Yuan era, which, as you know, lasted from 1264 to 1368, well ahead of Admiral Zhang.
That's what we believe, remarkable as it is to think a ship of that era found its way to Hawaiian waters.
The door to the lab opened, and in walked the Mariana Explorer's captain. A towering sandy-haired man, Bill Stenseth commanded the respect of the entire ship by his quiet intelligence and his good-natured sense of fair play.
Dahlgren has completed loading the fuel and supplies onto your floating hotel. Whenever you two are set to jump ship, we'll be on our way.
We're about finished, Captain. Dirk and I will get our things and join Jack on the barge.
You are still working on the wreck? Tong asked.
We have a final section of timber to uncover, which we believe may be part of the rudder post, Summer explained. If so, it will give us a better idea of the ship's dimension. The Mariana Explorer needs to continue a reef survey project on the other side of the island, so Dirk, Jack Dahlgren, and I are going to camp out on the barge for a few days and complete the excavation work.
I see, Tong replied. Well, thank you for sharing the recovered artifacts with me. When I return to Malaysia, I will research our museum's records and see if I can't provide you some additional information about the ceramics I have seen today.
Thank you for taking the time to visit us and share your insights. We are excited that you have confirmed our initial assessment of the ship's age and possible ancestry.
Dirk and Summer quickly threw together a few personal belongings and jumped onto the barge, where Dahlgren was busily removing the ship's mooring lines. With a blast of the horn, Captain Stenseth backed the Explorer away from the barge, and in a short while, the turquoise ship disappeared around the jagged coastline, heading toward Hilo.
Well, what did you two find out about our Chinese lava ship? Dahlgren asked, digging into a large cooler for a drink.
Dr. Tong agrees that the age of the ceramics matches our initial readings, which put the wreck at 700 to 800 years old, Summer replied.
The good doctor seemed mighty interested in the plate our lab boys thought had royal markings, though he wasn't willing to bite, Dirk said.
Professional jealousy, I think.
Summer grinned.
It's a royal ship. I just know it.
Royalty? Dahlgren said, plopping into a canvas chair with a can of beer and hoisting his feet to the side rail.
Now, don't that beat all?